Visual communication, visual thinking, is that one tool that can really help us all to understand each other better, therefore connect with each other better. And we all have that in ourselves. I find that the world has kind of created a bit of a story where you need to be a bit of an artist or a photographer or a painter to be creative and to think visually. And that's not true. I think we all think visually, we just don't utilize it enough, because unless you're into being visual and drawing and doodling, or you've got kids, we just completely stop using it as adults. For some reason, the world decided that it's childish, it's too playful, it's gimmicky, words are very important, voice is really important, and all the data and neuroscience and psychological books and all of that say that it's otherwise.
This week, Natalia Talkowska shares her journey from Poland to London's startup ecosystem and how her insatiable curiosity led her to build Natalka Design, a visual communication agency that enables leaders to drive business growth, communicate with more confidence, and engage their audiences. Natalia shares her mission of connecting people and making them feel seen and understood. She recounts the pivotal encounter with her mentor who fundamentally shaped her career and personal growth, and explains her approach to visual thinking as a strategic tool for distilling complex challenges and empowering decision-making within businesses. Throughout the conversation, she emphasizes the importance of human connection, creativity, and storytelling in an increasingly digital world. This episode is a must-listen for anyone interested in innovative problem-solving, personal development, and the evolving role of AI in creativity. Now, over to Natalia. Natalia.
Hi.
Welcome to the Impossible Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to be sitting in this unusual location here at Austin Public Library.
I know. I feel like you're the loco, and it's one of those gems that I needed to know about. So I'm really excited. I love a library.
It's excellent, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get going, because you are on a bit of a time crunch. Let's jump right into the big question. Who are you as a human being?
Who am I? I feel like I'm this curious creature that... my mission in this world is to bring people together, help them to be seen, and just to feel understood and connect all of us. That's why I'm here.
Okay.
And that's who I am.
A real connector of people.
I think so.
I'm going to come on and ask you why you are the person you are, but what is it that makes you driven to do that?
It always comes back to the same answer for me, because I know what it feels like to not be seen, and it sucks. And I feel like for me and anyone that I speak to, it's really important that we feel like part of something. We feel not alone. We feel like we matter. We feel like someone, at least one person, cares how we feel, how we are. And I think with all of that, we thrive more. We are more ready to get up in the morning and do something good and do something, create something, be something.
Okay. Well, that does lead to the second question. That drive you have inside you to do that, to have value to an agency of others, as Scott Galloway says, what is it that made you the person you are, or who made you the person you are?
I think, Mark, is probably a few things, right? It's never one thing, because we're a mixture of experiences and people we met and media and community and the country we're from and the family we grew up with and the people we surround ourselves with. But to keep it very focused, I guess, on the business kind of professional maybe part of my life and how I've been fueled by this belief and this passion is definitely someone. And I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't be running my business for 14 years. I wouldn't be touching people's lives and hiring people and impacting more people if it wasn't for random moment of luck, right timing, tweet to a person 14 years ago now, probably, yeah, that I said hi to on the internet back in the days on Twitter. And I said, hi, I would love to meet you for a coffee, as we all do, because I'm curious. And he said yes. And it was one of those power hours in your life when you're like,
wow,
something's happening to me, but I don't know what.
Okay, so tell more. What was it that drove you to contact this person? Who was this person? And that's a very courageous thing to do. A lot of people would often have ideas. Hey, I'd love to connect with this person. But to go out there, put yourself out there, take that risk, is pretty bold.
I guess so. I've been always curious to connect with people, and mind that I came to London just to study and I was supposed to go home. But something kept me there. And
came from where?
From Poland.
Poland, right.
Never traveled before in terms of flights or anything like that, you know, much. So London was this first exciting excursion that was supposed to finish after a year. I was very happy to go back home after. But something kept me curious. I was like, what is networking? What are all these people meeting up for? What is Gumtree? What is Soho? What is going on? What is that event? Who is this person? So just constantly fueled by this endless curiosity and creativity, I guess. And quickly it became quite natural for me to just say hi. And I did. And his name was Darren Robson. And I say was because he's no longer here, which is very sad. But he was a mutual friend, a businessman, person that still the charity continues building up young entrepreneurs and coaching people. And I thought, what an interesting person to say hi to. And clearly I needed some guidance, some moment of help, because when I was studying, I started working as a special needs teacher. That was lovely, but I knew that wasn't my path. And then I went into startup because everyone does, you know, like I can do startup, right? And I was underpaid, endless hours, didn't feel passionate about it. Crazy boss, one of those. And in that moment, that's when I said hi and he said yes. And I freaked out because he said yes to seeing me in Earl's Court all the way from Greenwich at 7 a.m. in a dodgy cafe. I had like little money, so I got him a tea at least. And I just had to put some sort of, you know, my work together because I was always drawing. I was always creating. I always had some random projects happening, but there was no cohesion, no intention, no kind of path. And we met 7 in the morning. He showed up. And it's one of those power hours where the context kind of that meeting was he listened to all my blurt out about how passionate I am about creating and visualizing stories, and I can turn complex into simple very quickly, very easily. But there was no, what can I do with this? And he said, you clearly have talent. Like, you're just wasting your time. Leave this job. We're going to hack you. We're going to help you. I don't know how. This is my number. Just like, let's figure this out. What is going on here? That was like, you know, I'm really putting it down into simple little story. It was more than that, but obviously for the context. And my first reaction was like, whoa, but also I was always taught to be quite pragmatic and, you know, level-headed. So I was like, well, great that you say that, but I don't really have any savings. I don't have anyone that can help me to, you know, kind of live in London or secure myself. So I can't really leave a job. It's not a movie. And a lot of people I find like struggle with that kind of moment of that movie. Like, I'm going to leave everything and just start something. So I was quite worried to do that. And long story short, he went, well, okay, can you give me a sense of how much for then you need per month around to stay safe, pay your bills, grab your coffee, go anywhere you need to go, whatever that is, tell me a number. And I was like, okay. And mind that wasn't one hour, but we were getting there. And what he did was basically without any form, any agreement or anything like that, he connected me with his EA. And he said, right, what we're going to do is for the next 6 months, I'm going to coach you. If you let me, you set up a website, get cards, do whatever you need to do, whatever kids do, you know, name your business. I don't know, whatever you feel like creating. And your job is to get out there, speak to people, ask them how you can help, share about your skills and your special passion and what do you bring to this world and see what happens.
Wow.
And what I'm going to do is cover your expenses every month. I think it was around 1200 or something a month back then, and mind that I was spending much less even that then. I was sharing with millions of people in London, went through all that. That's a book on its own. And what we did is, let's say he did that first month, I say hi to Tracy and I say, let's say first month I didn't earn anything because I just didn't. I tried my best, but I didn't. And she was like, okay, no worries, 1200 is coming to you. And then let's say month three, I earned 200, 300 and they paid 900 back. So we always evened it out for 6 months. And he saw me every week in London Bridge in a workspace that no longer exists. And I learned so much from him as a...
What was his background?
As a person. His background was always an entrepreneur, kind of creative person who is just not fitting any, I think, systems or anything like that. He was a MD of few companies. He started few companies, but he was always a big four consultant, transformation coach, that sort of space when I met him. But I think he's one of those people that just always kind of did his own thing and set up a charity as well that I was part of, Mo, that still is going and I still supported, and just left a huge legacy. And why I say unfortunately in a past sentence is because last year he passed away. So that really, really, really changed my life, and I'm still trying to understand it because he was gone suddenly. But until I'm on this planet, he will always be, you know, in my stories.
What an extraordinary story.
Yeah.
Wow, that is incredible.
I owe everything to him in terms of starting, running, being the person that I am. He was the first male positive character in my life, apart from my brother. So it meant so much more than just coaching and mentoring and, you know, that sort of thing.
So when you go back to the way you described who you are, about giving people, helping them be heard, be seen, is that because that's what he did for you?
Most probably. There's a huge part of in that because, you know, you can claim it was just one of those meetings and let's say I had energy then and I was younger and I did it and he did it and it was just this perfect moment in time for two people to do something together. But also, it must have been life-changing. I know it was life-changing for me because it was a huge kind of positive, energizing feeling of, wow, I can do this. Someone thinks I can do something like that. What is it that I'm actually doing? Whoa, is that like worth the time and energy? Clearly it is. Like, and so he helped me to believe in myself because he kind of showed me that I'm this person that can do wonderful things in life and help other people and actually use the skills that I have in a professional context, which I never thought would be possible, especially coming from Poland, where you grow up wanting to be Disney animation character designer and you never do, because if you say, oh, I would like to study art, there's just no support in that.
What were your early ambitions?
Well, Mark, there's few things I wanted to be when I was younger.
So you ended up being special needs.
Special needs, yeah.
Clearly it wasn't art. Whereas if that's where you ended up, did you have art and creativity in your vision, but pragmatically you were taken on a different path?
I was a head of art for special needs. So that was already somewhere, you know, fueling that passion for creating and storytelling and helping others to connect with that. And working with kids in that way was so rewarding and equally so hard because they were so unwell. But it's one of those things where, you know, how they say 10,000 hours, right? So I always think of drawing as it was my escapism. It was my safe place. I grew up in a bit of a chaotic household. So that was my place to go to. And I definitely marked the 10,000 hours and more. And I always call it the longest internship in my life. So that was always there. Then I started my first business at 17. Why not? Selling hand-painted pillows. My mom was my COO. Why not? So that was kind of keeping me curious. Oh, what an interesting thing to build something and people want it, right? And people respond to it. And language was a natural thing that I was progressing with. I loved language. Thank God I can speak to you. And I was studying a lot of interpreting language, which means instantly interpreting what you're saying to another language, which I think helped me massively with the pace of my thinking and work. So all of that combined weirdly became like a cocktail of what could that be in the future.
Just because of time, I'll go deeper into that, but we can always come back. So that incredible trajectory, just before we move on to the third big question, how did he feel about your transformation from when he met you as this project, let's say, to where the witness, the trajectory, the transformation you went on? Did he ever talk to you about it? And his sort of sense of your accomplishment, his pride, or?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I noticed that through the wonderful 13 years I got to know this human, and I'm so grateful I knew him for that time. We actually have like almost 2-3 photos. That's it. We have nothing but one podcast that he recorded 2021 with me like a more, I think, ecstatic version of me, like crazy, a bit energy, because I was so excited to speak to him. So there's one podcast out there where we speak about it. But we had a lot of conversations one-to-one where I knew that he's very proud. He was always laughing that he knew this is going to happen, whatever that this is. Because again, for me, it's like, how did you know? And he's like, well, I always knew that you just have too much passion and energy, and you believed without me. You just needed that little, you know, fire in the belly. And I didn't see that in the past. And I think it's a weird thing because it's been 14 years of my business and I wake up every day, most of days, let's be honest. Some days are harder, some days are better. We all know how it is to run a business, but there's this constant curiosity, constant belief. I love the fact that I don't know what's going to happen. Like, we're in Austin, I'm speaking to you, and it's all wonderful and random and serendipitous. And that fuels my all that I do, everything. So it's just been a constant, almost fuel since he started that years ago with me.
Well, third big question. What are you working to achieve now? We've done a lot in those 14 years, so you maybe touch on. But what are you working to do to achieve an impact before you shuffle off this mortal coil? A long way to go, hopefully.
A long way to go, hopefully, but we never know, right? So grateful for every day. I really, last year, losing Darren and lots of loss in my life last year. Lots, very painful. And I think getting older as well, I actually like getting older. I don't know, no one wants to talk about it, but I don't mind because I feel like whatever I do just becomes more meaningful, more intentional. There's a wider story to it. I want to connect more people. I want to bring more people on that journey. I want to do more, bigger impact with whatever I do. Just want to feel more people like they are seen, which means on a very practical level, hopefully continue to create projects that are more impactful, that are more wider scale, that connect more people, which could mean hopefully projects that are also connected with the good of this world. So I really, really, I love projects that are helping other people to thrive and to be seen. And I love projects that are all about sustainability. And I love projects that are all about future and how we all are getting there and how AI and us fit in there and how can we coexist. And so how that shows for the last few years is more partnerships, more community building, more projects that are, as much as my business is very B2B, creating experiences and building communities around, as I call it, fringe around the business, which I love. Like any festival has a good fringe, hopefully. Creating that sort of community, creativity, energy that fuels itself. So for me, it's just amazing to see new people connecting, new people creating new things. I love to be more and more involved in projects that no one would think that I could be involved in as well. And not to just like prove my ego or anything like that, but I always think, well, why not? Mm-hmm. If it is something useful and meaningful and needed.
You describe your business as a strategic storytelling agency. And you describe, and on the website, you say, we help you feel seen. You've mentioned that. By navigating complex challenges through visual thinking and empowering long-term strategic decision-making.
Boom.
So maybe, I mean, because I when I was learning a bit about what you've done in the past, I came across your creativity and something you launched some years ago called Doodly Do.
Yeah.
And that was a way of bringing people together around expressing themselves through visual storytelling. But what's visual thinking exactly?
If you are lucky enough to see, I always say that because we're not all able to, visual communication, visual thinking is that one tool that can really help us all to understand each other better, therefore connect with each other better, therefore hopefully attach ourselves to something, and therefore hopefully that brings a drive to do something. And we all have that in ourselves. I find that the world has kind of created a bit of a story where you need to be a bit of an artist or a photographer or a dancer or a video maker or a painter to be creative and to think visually. And that's not true. I think we all think visually, we just don't utilize it enough, because unless you're into being visual and drawing and doodling, or you've got kids, or it's a natural part of your work, we just completely stop using it as adults, because it's, for some reason, the world decided of work and business and professional environment that it's childish, it's too playful, it's gimmicky, less than, words are very important, voice is really important, and all the data and neuroscience and psychological books and all of that say that it's otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting, because looking at your site and looking at some of the visuals you put out there, the way that you're solving these business problems, or these, whether it be individuals or businesses, is mass scale visual storytelling through words and the use of marker pens on massive walls. And it looks very playful that you're presumably creating these environments where people, it unlocks something in them that brings that inner child out. Why are more companies not approaching problem solving and decision making using this technique if it's so natural to us?
Well, this is the thing, Mark. Like, if you, not to sound, you know, blow my own horn and sound too cocky, but if you look at our array of clients, they do. And it's wildly used in the big four, in the big tech companies, pharma, creative, you name it. We've been in those rooms because it is 90% B2B what we do. But outside, there's a bit of a presumption that there's a bit of a fear of losing that sort of, we are a brand, we have certain voice, we have certain style, we have certain look, we have certain approach. That's all good and well. And I always show examples where storytelling, and it doesn't just have to be markers with doodles. It can be all sorts of creations. That's how we started. These days, it could be projections. It could be beautiful AI-tooled creations. It could be clean graphics. It doesn't matter almost what's the execution. What's important is that it can all fit within your brand. But the fear is that, oh, what if it just looks like not me? Or if it gives a wrong impression? Or I'm this serious law firm. How do I bring that into my business? And there's millions of ways to do so in a very subtle, very brand-connected way. It doesn't have to be something that stays completely outside of your brand. It can be molded beautifully into what you do. And especially when it's something internal, that's where you can and you should have more fun, because fun and play, again, neuroscience and all the data says, brings out so much more in people. And there's a beauty to distilling something complex into simple. Again, we want to act on it more. When we see complex, we go like this. We don't want to do anything. It's overwhelming.
So how did you develop the methodology? Because it's not something you learn in business school. It's not something you learn at art school. It's not something that Big Four would talk about, a framework that people develop in their MBA. Presumably you've evolved this as a skill set over time to unlock people's imaginations, I assume. Their creativity, tap into their curiosity, package it up, and then deliver it as a solution. Is that fair?
It is super fair. And to your point, Mark, people love anything packaged. So if I can throw one tip here to anyone that's listening, whether you're in a business or running your own business, package, package, package everything you can, because it helps everyone to make a decision. I've learned that very quickly in the business. But methodology, yes, you're right. There's a dance to it almost. We never just go and assume and create. It's a journey. Yeah. We take the client on a journey, and how we take them on a journey is through a bunch of really good questions. At the beginning, it's all about, I want to know what's going on there for you. What's the issue? What's the complexity? What's the, it's not working really. This bit is not engaging. This bit, no one understands. This bit is really difficult to get yourself connected with. So we look at that, we zoom in, and how we package it is basically we do a bunch of IV sessions, instant visualization sessions, which could be a call, it could be a day, it could be in person, doesn't matter. But the point of it is to bring you into a room with whoever you need to be in the room. And we ask a lot of questions. And as you answer those questions, we take you on a journey where as you tell us that story, it comes to life in front of you in a visual form. So therefore, what happens to your brain is suddenly you completely forget you're in the room with a bunch of other people. You forget about me or my teammates. And you just look at what you're creating and it becomes more real, becomes more important. The brain goes, whoa, what I'm saying is coming to life in front of me. That makes it doable suddenly. And then, of course, we tinker. We look at it from left and right. We use techniques like in design thinking and all that. There's certain techniques that don't break something that works. So we just mold it into something that really works in that process. And only from then we decide on how we want to execute that story that will engage, that will definitely bring more attention and bring more yes and influence someone's decision making. Because it's basically based on data and facts. I go down deep into a rabbit hole of information placement, breathability, where is the call to action, what colors we use, down to everything. I'm a geek. So yeah, and it is a journey though. And I love seeing people going on that journey because my job is to empower them to believe that next time they can do it themselves. Doesn't have to be pretty. It's not about pretty. Express your ideas and thoughts in a different way. Therefore, you can have a more powerful outcome.
Going back to Darren, this idea of doing this visual storytelling, visualization of problem solving, was that part of the early incarnation of what you were beginning with Darren? Did he nudge you in that direction? Or was this something that was just an innate sense from doing special needs and seeing children, which presumably is unlocking something in them? You're almost a special needs teacher for a special needs coach for businesses using the same techniques. Is there a parallel there between where you came from and transpose those skills, the ability to unlock something buried inside someone?
I think, you know, everything comes from somewhere and it's all connected, and it's all, everything we do, everything we're exposed to, all of our past influences the future. So I totally agree with you. Probably you're right. Everything that I've done pre-meeting him, and I've done a lot of different random things. At some point, my illustrations were in Royal Family's book for saving the elephants, and I found myself in a dress at Christie's next to Wallace and Gromit illustrations. So things like that happened to me. Podcast number two, right? But I think what he did for me was I just went bleh at him. I want to do this, I want to do that, I'm passionate, whatever. And he distilled very quickly and simplified for me almost a vision of, well, based on what you're telling me, what I see, where's your skills and where's your passion and how this could be utilized in a very strategic, wonderful way, is helping people to distill these complex problems connected with transformation, with change, with innovation. So many companies are going through it daily. And just help them to make sense, therefore make better decisions. So one of the first things he did was, you're right, back then with markers and big papers, and I didn't know anything better. He was like, well, I have this session with Network Rail in a month or something. How about you hop on a train and help us visualize it? And I had no clue. There was no class, no nothing. I was like, yeah, sure. And I remember till this day, one of my first pieces, which I look at now and I'm like, oh, that could be better. But hey, that we started somewhere. And he without even like questioning it again, he was like, Natalia's going to narrate this whole conversation for us visually to make sense out of it so we can pull out the key objectives. And I stand there sweating inside and waving at everyone that that's what I am. So again, it's almost that sort of, you are that, just believe it.
So you've got this innate ability and talent to extract from people their stories and bring them to life visually. In all the companies and all the people you've dealt with, what observations have you got or perspective have you developed to why people struggle so much to tell stories, to express their stories, to bring, you know, unlock their imaginations? All you have to do is look at different companies' websites and realize how awful they are at telling their expressing as if, whether it's Simon Sinek saying start with why, or whether it be I went to an event here at South by Southwest for masterclass on storytelling, and it's very few companies can deliver it. And probably the worst companies at storytelling are ad agencies, are telling their own stories. And that's kind of first-hand experience. So you must have a point of view on this and why people struggle.
Well, I always say it's like going to a hairdresser. Their hair will be awful, but yours will be amazing. So that on the point of everyone's, you know, struggling but doing amazingly for others. I think we all have innate fear of being judged and not understood again, and we don't want to be thought of as not communicative enough and clear enough. And there's this huge problem of all of us fearing that we won't be understood and won't be therefore part of something again and won't be let in to wherever we want to be let in as part of something. So we struggle because when we think about it, we were never really properly introduced to a class in storytelling, a class in communication, a class in negotiation, a class in observing people's body language, a class in how we communicate, how we use the voice, how we use our hands, how we construct a story. When it comes to stories, it's literally a few points. You know, it's the start, it's the middle, it's the end. But a lot of us are fearing, what if it goes wrong? What if I don't make any sense? What if I mess up? And we're all struggling. I spoke to the highest CEOs in the biggest companies, and everyone has the same fear still. Although they have the most fabulous slides ready that they paid for thousands of pounds, they will still think, is it a lot, right? It's a lot, I don't know. So I just would love everyone, and that's probably part of my mission, to kind of bring all that together and let us all feel that, first of all, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to, you know, mumble through some parts of it. But at the core of it is I wish we all could feel like it doesn't matter. Just tell the story like you would tell it to a friend. And think less is more.
It's strange. I can't remember who it was. One of the sessions I went to at South By, storytelling was described as the first general purpose technology around the campfires. Awesome. It's the first way that we as humans communicated. It's how we procreated. It's how we evolved as a species. It's how we make meaning. It's how we distill the complex. It's how we survive. And yet, through all the generations, some people are just not adept at it, and we still struggle with it. And as we're entering this world of AI, that if it is the original general purpose technology, what's going to happen to us as humans, as storytellers, as AI starts to change everything, the way we live, the way we work? Do you have any sense of where we're headed?
Ooh.
As storytellers?
Depending on the day, Mark, I have a utopian or a dystopian version of that.
I think we all do, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just had a very interesting, challenging conversation this morning, and I have them every day. And just today, I had an access to the latest ChatGPT, which, you know, sounds and acts more and more like a human. And why they do that is to make us feel more and more like this AI behaves and is more like us. So therefore, we fear it less, and therefore, it becomes more seamless, part of our lives. That's just the journey, like with everything else. This phone, we don't think about anymore, that we touch, that we have it in our hands. It's part of the end. It's scary to think, but it is. And to your point, storytelling's been always part of our innate power to us and part of our lives. First, cave doodles, that's how we communicated, right? I always say this is not my invention. We've done this before. Where we, if I go utopian part of that journey, where I hope the utopian could happen is, I sometimes hope that, and I see these glimpses of that, what if in the future AI became so seamless, just like the phone and and internet and everything else, is that we crave that human element still? We crave those offline experiences, really offline, because it's hard to be offline. This is listening to me and you, and this knows what questions you're asking, and this knows what you're filming. And what if there would be a space, just like the B Corp label, hashtag made by humans, I don't know how, but it can be checked that this has been created, thought through, ideated by humans, and therefore suddenly it's more expensive again, it's more special, it's more unique, it's kind of like a Banksy again, across, you know, all the other, let's say, things. But that's a utopian, version. There's a dystopian version where if we go too much too fast, we might lose ourselves into it and become a bit of a washing machine of ideas, because what AI does is just kind of creating from what it knows. So how do we bring new if it always creating is the old? Even now, sitting on Instagram and everything, my view on the world is very limited. I see dogs and cats and art and dance videos because I'm into it. Why don't I see things that are challenging me more? Why don't I see things from different countries more? Why don't I see different opinions? If I want that, I need to have challenging conversations. I need to read different books, which I'm trying to. I need to read challenging articles. I need to travel.
But as journalism is being decimated by the advertising industrial complex, at National Geographic's closing down, all these magazines are losing funding. Wired have fired 75% of their journalists. Where are we going to find this information if it is, as you say, it's just AI generated? What does it mean for truth? What does it mean? There was something I posted on Twitter today, which was 95% of people feel they don't trust, or 78% of people don't trust images they see, and 95% of people say that they want to feel there's some way to validate an image that they encounter. Because we're all sensing this lack of authenticity and feeling the impact of this dystopian route that we might be on. This is a Getty Images study. So I think it's a problem. I don't think any of us have got answers for it, but it's clearly, there's a challenge that's lying ahead. But I suppose, to your point, made by humans, the only thing, storytelling, when you're sitting human to human, tapping into people's creativity, their curiosity, generating their unlocking their ingenuity, and then bringing it to life by hand, is storytelling made by humans. So maybe that is going to become, maybe what you're doing is going to become more valuable than it is now in the future.
That's the hope, because I'll forever in my last day, I'll be speaking about the fact that we're all creative. You don't have to be a dancer, photographer to be creative. The way you took that route today to work and it was shorter and different and you crossed through a path that is a bit grassy, that's a creative decision.
Yeah.
That is, so I always will speak about that. We're all storytellers. We're told we're not, because we have to be professional to do that. We were all told that in a professional environment, storytelling, visualizing concepts is a bit, could be, not everyone. There's companies that embrace it massively, and we've seen that now and time again, why Apple is one of the biggest businesses still in the world, because the storytelling is on point and the visuals are on point. And it's not even about the product. It's about how it makes you feel. You're part of a story. You're part of a community. When you open that product on the table, you feel a certain way, you are a certain way. We can all talk about what we like, what we don't. I always say I'm Switzerland. I love to try all different tools. We're ambassadors for Microsoft. I'll always look out for the tools that help me. I'm biased about it. But we're all storytellers. We were just told that we need to be professional, and the more complex something is, and the more I sound like I'm clever, the more someone will respect me, the more someone will listen to me. Where actually you're losing audience if you mumble for 20 minutes and no one knows what you're doing and what you're saying. You lost them. So the study says what used to be 8 seconds, whatever, we have attention span. Forget the 8 seconds. I don't even know if we have 2 anymore. To get someone's attention to listen to you, because we're so overwhelmed and the world is going so fast, especially with AI, will always now be slower than the progress. So how do we help ourselves to stay sane, stay on top of it, and still make sense? And where I see the world going again is this crazy digital innovation, but equally, I've just bumped into something called Offline Club. which is cafe in Amsterdam, which probably there'll be more of those soon, where people are forbidden to use phones. And I bet there's more than just in Amsterdam. And they show videos of people chatting, people reading, people just like almost being on a bit of a detox and not knowing what to do with themselves, with their hands. And maybe, again, going the utopian way, maybe we all need to do that as the world is progressing. I don't know. Maybe both can live together. Maybe they can't. We'll see as we progress. But I just would like everyone to be a bit more aware as we progress.
Okay. It's a nice point to ask you your advice to people that might just be starting out today. From your point of view, looking back, how would you counsel people today, given everything you've just said? To how should they think about their careers in the future, given there is so much uncertainty?
I said that years ago, and I believed that as a kid, and I will, I think, probably say that until I'm on this planet, depending how long I'm on it. Connect with people, talk to them, ask questions. It's beautiful that we can do all these things, tech, innovation, digital. I love it. I wouldn't be here without it. We wouldn't say hi without it. We wouldn't be here without it. This wouldn't be filmed without it. But at the core of it, I'll always say to everyone, I wouldn't be here wherever I am if I didn't say hi. And also, don't be discouraged if 100, 200 people don't even reply. Maybe 201 will.
You just need the one Darren.
And not even one Darren. What if you don't find a Darren to put that less of a pressure that you need to find that story for yourself and call me, you know, well, you have a lucky special story. How about finding a Tom, a Kate, a Anna, a Jeff, a Prabhupada, a, you know, whoever who can guide you through your path into whatever you're going to be doing next. And just before I met you, I had a great conversation with someone who's like, Austin is so well connected in terms of people. So many people have started new businesses or got new jobs because of talking to people. So I will forever advise that, suggest that. And it's all about community and creativity. That's how we thrive.
Before wrapping up, some quick fires.
Let's do it.
Who or what inspires you?
Disney.
Okay. That's a good one. What principles do you live by?
Be kind.
Okay. How do you deal with your fears, uncertainty, and doubt, the things that we all deal with, regardless of how successful we are?
I talk to someone I care about and trust and tell them how I feel, and they tell me otherwise.
Okay. What would you like your legacy to be? Or is it too early for that?
Never too early, because God knows how long I have here. She made me feel like I matter.
Okay. Is there a book you would recommend that someone read if they had one book to read when they're in the offline club in Amsterdam?
The Creative Act.
Okay, don't know that one.
Love it.
Put that in the show notes. A show or a movie to watch that you've seen recently you think you must watch?
I'm a bit of an old school person. I haven't seen new movies in ages, so I will always come back to Inception. It's one of my favorite movies, or Matrix.
Okay. Can't go wrong with that. A life hack?
Get up early and do something for yourself in the morning.
How early?
However early you find early.
All right. We believe in reciprocity in the podcast. That's why we'd ask our last question. But before I do, are you open to me connecting you with other people to create and engineer random collisions and possibly find ways for you to collaborate?
I love collisions. Bring it on.
Okay. And final question. Who do I interview next?
Ooh. Do I need to give a name specifically?
Yeah, you have to give it to me now, but you have to think of someone and then... After the podcast is live, you have to connect me with that person.
Of course I will. I just really want to have a moment and think about it, because there's so many people that popped in my head and they're all like lined up here, and I want to have a great think about it.
Fine.
To connect you with someone that you will really love speaking to. Yeah, I'll all think right. about it and connect.
Okay, well, this has been a fast and furious podcast interview outdoor here. So we did it. So just thank you very much for your time, Natalia.
Thank you.
Appreciate your candor, your honesty, your openness, And yeah, really excited to see where you take the visual storytelling and problem solving over the next 10 years as AI starts to envelop us.
Exactly. It'll be either me responding to you or my digital twin.
Well, I think we're all going to have digital twins.
Or triplet or someone, right? Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, that's all for now, folks. Now, here's my ask of you. Please follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or whatever player you use. Also, please subscribe to our new Random Collisions newsletter. We really are working to build a global community of action takers, action engines of people that really care about the problems that need solving. Thank you very much, and see you next time.